Welcome to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you today, broadcasting from my basement out here on the eastern plains of Colorado. I'm a homeschool father of five. Our children involved with our ministry at various levels, all part of the family economy and the family ministry. I see my daughter Abigail is fulfilling orders right next to us in the order department, the shipping department. And, of course, my daughter Rebecca does most of the technical editing for the program and has for now about 7 years, I think. My son Daniel was doing it before she was. My daughter Emily does much of the phone calls and the customer service, and she also does the Worldview in 5 minutes. She does many of the interviews involved with that program and a lot of the preparation for it. So Bethany is our typesetter for many of the books that are coming out through our program as well. The Christian Curriculum Program, I think we're releasing something like 10 or 15 textbooks and workbooks, teacher guides this year, and Bethany is doing much of the typesetting for these as well. So our children have been involved in the ministry for a very long time. Steve, I know that your children are involved with yours as well.
Yes.
And I just so encourage people to some level of family economy, some level of family ministry, you know, some level. We're not saying what you need to do or how you need to do it. We're not saying dad needs to come home. But we talk about these things at our conferences where we're trying to restore the biblical family. And the NOAA conference is coming to two places around America, Kentucky and Washington State this year. So if anybody wants to sign up for the NOAA conference, just simply go to our website, generations.org, and click on events. So, you know, we encourage people to these conferences in which they may be encouraged to restore the biblical family in an era in which the biblical family, biblical forms of education, biblical forms of discipleship have been obliterated from the mind of the modern church and from modern man. So we're encouraging people to the NOAA conference. Again, friends, go to our website, generations.org, and sign up today for the NOAA conferences, Washington State and Kentucky. And they're filling up fast. We've got over 1,100 signed up for the Kentucky conference. All right, let's hit this news item here before we head out to other subjects. And this is important, Steve, I think, for families that are sending their kids off to the public schools. The Center for Sex Offender Management, a project operated by the U.S. Department of Justice, has come out with the number of school employees prosecuted for student sex crimes in just 2014. This is just per year. The number is, get this, you'll never believe it, 800. 800 school employees prosecuted for student sex crimes, about one-third female. Fox News has made something of a deal out of this recently. There have been some more publicized stories of women teachers that are engaged in student sex crimes. It's some 30% of the teacher-student sexual offenses are perpetrated by females, and that's somewhat of a surprise because females account for only about 10% of all sex crimes. So, but when it comes to the schools, the female teachers are even more involved than they are elsewhere. So it's a very, very common thing. Very, very common. Much more common than I thought, friends. 800 school employees prosecuted for student sex crimes around this country in any given year. WorldNet Daily used to count them and used to relate the stories and warn parents that this kind of thing was going on. Steve, this should not be too surprising in that the schools are so sexualized. They're talking about it. Sex ed, homosexual indoctrination. This kind of thing very, very common in the schools. So they're just talking about sex all day long. Schools are sexualized. And the fact that teachers are going to dabble in this kind of thing shouldn't be too surprising. In fact, this is much like the gymnasium, the Greek gymnasium. The humanist schools are patterned after the Greek thing. They're not patterned after the Hebrew model. They're not patterned after the Word of God. There's no Christian discipleship program going on here. The public schools are patterned after the Greek gymnasiums. In fact, they even call the gymnasiums after the Greek gymnasium. And the Greek gymnasium involved a great deal of sexual activity and, of course, laboratory experience as well. That is, the sex ed classes usually involve some degree of laboratory experience. This was all part of what the Greeks did. And as the American public schools become more epistemologically self-conscious concerning their Greek humanist model that they have incorporated, you know, the classical model from the Greeks, of course they're going to have more sexualized experience between the teachers and the students. This is the Greek model, Steve. Shouldn't be any surprise at all that there are some 800 school employees that are involved in student sex crimes. It's just, to me, I'm surprised that the humanist courts aren't catching up with their humanist schools. Where is the self-consistency to the Greek model here? That's the only question I'm asking. Of course, they've abandoned the Christian worldview. They're not bringing these children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. You ask any school, are you obedient to the Ephesians 6:4 mandate? These public schools will tell you, no way, no way. We are obedient to the Greek model, not to the Ephesians 6:4 model.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that in most of these types of reports, they're reporting that this is somehow wrong when, you know, there is no right or wrong. And I mean, they're teaching it. So then they come around and say, well, what's going on here? This seems to be wrong. We shouldn't be doing this. Why not?
How in the world did this hardcore, moralistic perspective come in a world in which there is no morality? There's no ethical standard. We've been talking about ethical relativism for the last 10 years. And now here the courts are acting as if there's some kind of standard that we need to impose upon the teachers and the students in the public schools. Inconsistency. Can you spell it? Inconsistency. It may be difficult for the public school students to spell inconsistency, but it's inconsistent. And here's one more inconsistency before we take a break here on this one. The Vatican, has been called on the carpet for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The Vatican, right? The Catholic Church has been called on the carpet for sexual offenses. And the Vatican has defrocked 3,400 priests in 10 years and employees of the church. 3,400 in 10 years, that's 340 per year worldwide, compared to 800 public school teachers in America in the last year or so.
Wow.
Yeah, 340 priests versus 8, and that's worldwide, versus, and that's, you know, they're working with some billion plus constituents.
Right.
All right, so some 340 priests working with a billion-plus constituents prosecuted, at least by the church, and I'm not sure how many have been prosecuted in America or around the world per year, but I don't think it's more than a couple hundred. But compare that to 800 public school teachers in America. Now, it's a shameful, degrading thing to the Roman Catholics that they're dragged into this entire scandal. To me, this is an indication of a corruption, a basic corruption in the Roman Catholic Church, where they're denying the power of the gospel of Christ. But the pagan, unbelieving world of the public schools are worse. And I'm not seeing anybody doing an expose on public schools. Fox News, for the first time in just the last week or so. WorldNet Daily has been hammering on this one for the last 15 years. We've been following WorldNet Daily on teacher abuse in public schools for the last 15 years. But I'm not seeing that CNN or Fox News is doing some kind of an expose on this kind of stuff. The most dangerous place in America for American children are the public schools. Why? Because there are so many sex offenders in the public schools. This becomes a dangerous place. Now, the confessional or whatever might have been a dangerous place for kids, or the choir or whatever might have been a dangerous place for the kids, Catholic kids, in the 1980s and 1990s. But here, friends, 800 school employees prosecuted for student sex crimes in 2014 in the public schools. I think American parents ought to take note of that. Protect your children, friends, from these horrible, horrible situations. Protect your children from these things. Homeschool them or give them Christian teachers. Now, of course, from time to time, Christian teachers as well tend to these kinds of sins. And so be careful. Be aware. Find out what kind of church discipline is going on within your own local church and within your own local church schools. Find out what's happening in terms of the discipline going on in these situations. Personally, I think it's dangerous in the era in which there is so much child porn and there's so much sexualized pornography going on, and so many of these male teachers, these female teachers, have access to some of the worst possible inputs through their iPhones and iPads, and they're not controlled on these issues. It makes it extremely dangerous to delegate education to anybody else in an era like this. So as parents, be ever so cautious in the delegation of the education of your children to others, whether it be Christian schools, private schools, or what have you. Be oh so careful. Be oh so careful. Homeschooling may be more the option for parents who love their children and want to protect their children, that they not stumble their children, and that they not risk the millstone treatment. Be back in just a moment with more on the Generations Broadcast.
In a world of transgender bathrooms and Common Core classrooms, American Christians are facing unprecedented attacks on the biblical family. 2,000 years ago, the apostles faced similar hostility to the Christian faith. In Acts 2, Peter called those who had just crucified Jesus a few weeks before to repentance and faith in God's promise of salvation. His closing admonition to these men is just as relevant today as it was then. Save yourselves from this corrupt generation. What resulted was the greatest outbreak of the gospel the world had ever seen. Join families from across the country for the 2017 NOAA Conference in Cincinnati, Ohio on August 11th and 12th, or in Ocean Shores, Washington on October 20th and 21st. Based on lessons from the life of Noah, the 2017 NOAA Conference will prepare you to engage your kids, disciple them in an ungodly generation, and launch them into life as ambassadors of Jesus Christ. Speakers include Ken Ham, Buddy Davis, Emil Zwane, Israel Wayne, Kevin Swanson, and others. And most exciting of all, Cincinnati attendees will receive free admission to Ken Ham's new Ark Encounter for an unforgettable family vacation just minutes away from the NOAA Conference. Ocean Shores attendees will enjoy a splendid oceanside family getaway on 6 miles of sandy beach on the magnificent Pacific Coast. Go to NOAAConference.org to register and get back to the basics of what it means to disciple your children in the gospel of Jesus Christ. The only lifeboat that will stand the storm. That's NOAAConference.org.
You're back on the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Steve on in studio with me as we discuss issues that are affecting Christians today. And this issue affects Christians at so many different levels. The question of homosexual weddings, Pastor John MacArthur answered the question at a Ligonier conference just a month ago as to whether it's sinful to provide services for a homosexual wedding. Although the panelist says here in the story, were initially hesitant to answer the question. MacArthur responded by saying that providing products to same-sex weddings is not a sin. No, it's not sinful, he said, for a cake maker to make a cake for a gay wedding any more than it's sinful for a guy who runs a restaurant to serve dinner to somebody who's gay, etc., etc. Now, Steve, I want to address this. I think we need to address it because this is something that is relevant to just about every Christian in the marketplace today, and we must interact with these questions. And the first note I want to make is this. I think it demonstrates the weakness of the Christian faith in this country towards homosexuality, this entire exchange. And first is because of a general hesitation to answer the question.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. At the Ligonier conference, there seemed to be something of a hesitation to answer the question about homosexuality, a general lack of courage. Now, I see this. Now, this may not have entirely characterized what was going on this panel, but I'm thankful that John MacArthur had the courage to address the question. But friends, very few Christians have the strength to stand against the gay Borg, the homosexual blitzkrieg today, the sodomite emperor's new clothes charade. It's very difficult for people to stand up in an era like this. You could say you're against abortion today in your average college classroom and probably not get stoned for it. But you stand up and you address the issue of sodomy in that classroom, and you will be stoned or something close to it. Believe me, I know the persecution involved. I know the death threats. I know the ostracizing that happens in the Christian community when you breathe a word against the preferred sin of the day. I understand the difficulty of standing up against one of the absolute worst, most abominable sins that humans have ever committed. And I commend John MacArthur for his courage to answer the question. But here, one more qualification here, Steve, and that is even using the word gay wedding. Yes. Which apparently was used in the response. Even using the word gay is a capitulation. Now, if he had said the miserable wedding versus the gay wedding,
yeah,
that would have been more accurate.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Or the sodomite wedding.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. Or the homosexual wedding, perhaps. But not gay wedding. And why? Well, because, again, what you're doing is you're capitulating to not just the sin itself and the beauty of the sin, the goodness and the gayness of the sin, but you're capitulating to the destruction of language. Listen to C.S. Lewis. This is the quote that I've referred to, I think, before, but I'm going to give you the quote from C.S. Lewis word for word right now. You've got to listen to this. He's actually speaking of the word gentleman, but you can use the word gay, either way. When a word ceases to be a term of description and becomes merely a term of praise, it no longer tells you facts about the object. It only tells you about the speaker's attitude to that object. As a result, it is now a useless word. That is, gay is a useless word,
right,
or gentleman. We had lots of terms of approval already, so it was not needed for that use. On the other hand, if anyone wants to use it in its old sense, he cannot do so without explanation. It has been spoiled for that purpose. So what has happened is the words are being destroyed. This is the systematic destruction of language. By using the word as a term of praise rather than a term of description. Now, friends, you have to think a little bit critically on this. You have to think at a little bit higher level before you use the words. You need to be smart as to what you're doing. C.S. Lewis says you're destroying the language. You're destroying the word itself by using the word wrongly. Now, I wish Christians would not capitulate. Of course, they're capitulating because they're using the word as a term of praise, which is entirely what the homosexual population wanted us to do. And you know, we're allowing them to grab the ring in our nose and pull us wherever they want to take us.
And all that does is just send us down the wrong path even further. It doesn't help the situation at all to use the term gay. I think you need to use homosexual or sodomite.
Now, Steve, I want to respectfully disagree with our brother. I appreciate John MacArthur. I think he's one of the most outstanding Christian leaders of our day, and I respect him on many, many, many levels. But I'd respectfully disagree with our brother on this issue. The question was, should Jack Phillips disagree on making a wedding cake for a homosexual wedding specifically assigned for the purpose of celebrating a homosexual wedding? And John MacArthur, as I see it, categorically said it's not a sin. Now, he said, if it's against your conscience, don't do it. But he acted as if the more mature man, not the weaker brethren, but the more mature, the stronger brethren, would his conscience would not be bothered by it. And he would go ahead and make the cake. Now, I respectfully disagree with that because there's a difference between selling apples in the marketplace, and he referred to that, slash the restaurant. There's a difference between selling apples in the marketplace where there's a significant level of anonymity going on, and then, on the other hand, being asked to contribute to a heathen ceremony. I wish Christians would read 1 Corinthians 10. I wish Christians would study 1 Corinthians 10. We have entire chapters on this in my book, The Tattooed Jesus, what the real Jesus would do with his pop culture. And I would encourage Christians to be very careful on this issue. I mean very careful on this issue. Extremely careful on this. I'm going to read a warning from Jesus himself in Revelation 2. Absolutely be careful, Christians, when it comes to these heathen ceremonies. You be oh so careful on this. There's a difference between selling apples in the marketplace and being asked to contribute to a heathen ceremony. There's a difference. Listen to 1 Corinthians 10:25. Paul says, eat whatever is sold in the meat market, asking no questions for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord's and its fullness. If any of those who do not believe invites you to dinner and you desire to go, eat whatever is set before you, asking no question for conscience sake. But if anyone says to you, this was offered to idols, do not eat it for the sake of one who told you and for conscience sake. Boom. That is, if he's saying this is for a homosexual wedding and an offering to the goddess Diana, don't you dare participate. Don't you dare contribute. So what are you saying? See, this, the distinction between just selling a few apples to somebody who may be a homosexual, no big deal. I understand that. But at the point at which he says, this is for Diana, this is for a heathen ceremony, thereby implying that you, by your offering, are supporting the heathen ceremony, the heathen sacrifice. It's at the point at which he specifies it's a homosexual wedding that Christians must not participate with this. If the man doesn't specify that it's a homosexual wedding, then just give him the stupid cake. You see the difference?
Yes.
And that's what Paul's bringing out here. Now, you're doing it not just for your own conscience sake, but for his conscience. Because you do not want to implicitly endorse what he is doing, as he is encouraging you to the implicit endorsement of it. He wants you to join in to the heathen sacrifice or the heathen ceremony. Don't you dare do it, Christian. I know you're going to risk the ostracization of your own Christian brothers and sisters over this. I understand that. I understand that you will probably get death threats. If you take the Supreme Court of the United States, you most certainly will. Jack Phillips, he received a death threat in which his own daughter was threatened.
Yes.
His own daughter's name was mentioned. The location of the store was mentioned in the death threat itself. I know where you are. You're right here. I know your daughter works there. Jack Phillips, yes, his life was threatened over this. But friends, it's going to take courage. I mean real faith to stand in a time like this against the most heathen ceremonies this nation has ever incorporated and endorsed by the Supreme Court of the United States. You know, all Christian leaders would do well to read Revelation 2:14. I would encourage anybody on that panel at the Ligonier Conference to read Revelation 2:14. Jesus speaks to the church at Pergamos. He says, I have a few things against you. You have some there who hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel so that they might eat the food sacrificed to idols and practice sexual immorality. Now, what is happening here? Sexual immorality and the encouragement of Christians to participate in the food offered to the heathen idols in these homosexual ceremonies. That's what's going on right now. Christians, you need to come out from among them, be separate. We've got to repent on these issues. The church at Pergamos, whether it be our church out here in Elizabeth or John MacArthur's church or the Ligonier churches, friends, it's time to repent on these issues that we not eat the food sacrificed to idols and practice the sexual immorality. This is the key thing. You know, some people say, what's wrong with just baking a cake? They're just symbols. They're just symbols. And the words on the cake, the little symbols of the two men holding hands and kissing on the top of the cake, they're just symbols. Well, they mean stuff. This is the problem. This is what food offered to idols are. They have symbolic and sacramental meaning to those involved with them. And that's why Christians are not to eat this food offered to idols, because by eating the food offered to idols and participating in this food offered to idols, we are celebrating with the demons involved in the heathen sacrifice. That according to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. So, you know, some people say there's nothing wrong with a cake. I mean, come on. All things are lawful. Not all things are expedient. What's wrong with the middle finger, for example? You know, I use that from time to time. Occasionally, you find Christians who want to be relevant to the culture, and they've been at these rock concerts where, you know, kids are using the middle finger and participating in these irreverent symbols that involve, that stand for extreme sexual violence. That's what the middle finger stands for in American society. Well, of course, you have the Christians who want to be relevant, and so they'll want to bring the middle finger into a church worship service and lift the middle finger in a church worship service as if, you know, all things are lawful. All things, God's made all the fingers. We can lift any one of them. And so they argue that we have to be relevant with our music forms. We have to be relevant with our middle fingers and all of our symbols. So they want to lift the middle finger in the worship service. Now, I don't know if anybody has gone quite this far before, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that says, yes, let's be obnoxious and bring this obnoxious symbol. I'm sorry, this obnoxious symbol out there, but we're going to change the symbol and we're going to use it within the church worship service. The problem, of course, Steve, is that the identification of the symbol and the things that it symbolized is very, very tight in the mind of the American. And so to support the concept by the use of the symbol would be abhorrent in a church worship service, including using certain music forms. It's almost like, you know, if I was to preach on Sunday morning with a big old Playboy symbol on my T-shirt, you know, I kind of, first of all, I dress irreverently because everybody knows that the more informal you are, the more authentic you are, you know. The more informal, the more authentic. So we're going to be as informal and as irreverent as we can possibly be at every single level in order to tell, show everybody that we are these amazingly authentic people who authentically don't fear or reverence the true and living God. So that's the worldview being presented in worship. But then I add to that a Playboy symbol on the T-shirt. Big old Playboy symbol. Now, what's wrong with a bunny? I mean, come on, Steve, it's just a bunny. It's just a bunny. Well, see, the problem, of course, is people identify.
Yeah.
Don't they know what it is? What it stands for? Now, you know, if you're out in the middle of Africa, some little boy's wearing a T-shirt with a Playboy bunny on it, it's lunch for him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a rabbit. I mean, come on. But the symbols mean stuff, and I think this is the thing that Christians need to remember, especially as we enter into a paganized society, as we have in the most present era. So, encouragement to you as we wrap up this edition of the Generations Broadcast is to grab a copy of my book, The Tattooed Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Do with Pop Culture, which deals with this symbology. And we cannot be naive when we're treating the symbols of the world around us and how those symbols bear meaning. So, again, the book is The Tattoo Jesus, available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
If you want the right worldview for your news, you'll want the right worldview for your children's education. That's why we've produced a Worldviews in Conflict curriculum for your teens. It's a curriculum that will equip them to engage the war of the worlds. Check it out at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum. It's Monday, July 10th. AD 2017. This is the World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. President Donald Trump began his second trip abroad last Thursday by traveling to Warsaw, where he delivered an address to the people of Poland. Trump emphasized the spiritual need of America and Europe as he reflected on nearly 40 years earlier when Poles gathered at the Capitol for a Christian service.
A million Polish people did not ask for wealth. They did not ask for privilege. Instead, 1 million Poles sang 3 simple words. We want God. Their message is as true today as ever. The people of Poland, the people of America, and the people of Europe still cry out, we want God.
Trump also spoke on the importance of faith and family.
We put faith and family, not government and bureaucracy, at the center of our lives. We can have the largest economies and the most lethal weapons anywhere on earth. But if we do not have strong families and strong values, then we will be weak and we will not survive. So together, let us all fight like the Poles, for family, for freedom, for country, and for God.
President Trump is no conformist. During the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany, he refused to wear the G20 pin on his lapel like most of the other world leaders. Instead, he underscored America's exceptionalism by sporting a pin of Old Glory, reports the American Mirror. Romans 12:2 warns, do not be conformed to this world. Here's some good news. For the moment, Charlie Gard's life support machines will not be turned off by the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, England. That is until a high court examines whether they approve of the 11-month-old receiving experimental treatment at New York Presbyterian Hospital. No doubt the fact that 379,774 people signed a petition pleading and praying for the infant made a difference. Just as an English hospital has been violating parental rights by refusing to implement the best medical attention for their child, communist Cuba is penalizing a pastor and his wife who dare to homeschool their children. Pastor Ramon Regal has been sentenced to a year in prison, and his wife Adia was ordered to spend a year under house arrest. In an email to the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Pastor Regal wrote, quote, today I talked to my lawyers, and I know they will not offer a good defense. They will not respond to international complaints, cancel the trial, and withdraw their accusations because they are not interested in human rights. Here, they do what they want, unquote. HSLDA noted that, quote, a country's treatment of homeschooling is a barometer of that nation's commitment to true freedom. A state that forces children to learn state-approved values in state-run schools is tyrannical and totalitarian, unquote. In our transcript today at theworldview.com, you can sign the HSLDA petition urging the Cuban government to respect the rights of Pastor Regal and his family. Alveda King, niece of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., blasted a bill passed by Oregon Democrats Saturday that provides free abortions for illegal aliens, calling it inherently racist and an incremental tool of eugenics, reports WorldNetDaily.com. You could probably have cooked a fried egg on a Phoenix, Arizona sidewalk last Friday, since it was a scorching 117 degrees, breaking a record set in 1905. A police officer sang, "You Are My Sunshine," at the request of a blind elderly woman after helping her with her microwave in Logan, Utah, reports SunnySkies.com. Shirley Hardman was home alone at the time and worried that her malfunctioning microwave might start a fire, so she called the operator and asked for someone to help her make sure everything was okay. After Officer Christian Johnson reset the appliance, listened to their exchange captured on his body cam.
Is there anything else I can do for you?
Do you sing?
I don't. I'm not a good singer.
I see. Well, we can start now.
What would you like to hear? How about some Frank Sinatra?
You Are My Sunshine.
Okay. Now, I'm a bad singer. Okay, but I'll try it for you.
All right.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Well, you can sing.
Well, not very well.
I'll always remember this morning.
Well, if there's nothing else I can do for you, I better get back out on the road.
I think you should. Thank you.
Take a look at the video, which we have linked in our transcript, to see the blind lady's delight when the officer begins singing. It'll make your day. Proverbs 17:22 says, a cheerful heart is good medicine. And that's the World View in 5 minutes. On this Monday, July 10th, in the year of our Lord, 2017, invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ. What kind of worldview do your children get? The vast majority of teens from Christian families are abandoning a biblical worldview, according to the Barna Group. Sadly, many parents do not realize that the curriculum they have chosen for their children actually conveys the wrong worldview of history, science, life's purpose, and truth. Pass on the faith to your children with a distinctively Christian education. Check out our Christian discipleship curriculum at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum.